And welcome back to the Second and Two podcast. I'm your host, TB. I got my co-host, producer extraordinaire, connoisseur of the hats, and all-around good friend, Jody. What's up, Joe?
What's good, man? I know we briefly talked about it. I know this is a football main, you know, chatterbox over here, but we got March Madness going on, and I was telling you how busted my bracket is, so... I mean, I want to hear how yours is doing. Clearly, it's a lot better than mine. I got like 22% or something correct so far.
As of time of recording, 13 of my Sweet 16 teams are alive.
Ooh.
7 of my Elite Eight are alive. My entire Final Four of UConn, Arizona, Duke, and Creighton are alive. 3 of those teams have made the Sweet 16. The last one to play is UConn, who is actually... the national champ in my bracket. I got him repeating Florida style 05-06. So we'll see if we can get that done. But feel pretty good about it right now. You know, I'm in like a work pool.
Yeah.
And I'm doing okay, you know. Only team that really hurt me so far is St. Mary's. I had them in the Elite Eight, and they smoked me by losing to Grand Canyon.
I think I had GCU, but it was like all the other picks were so bad, it didn't even matter who I had, where I'm not getting no points anywhere down the road besides UConn at this point.
Shout out to Creighton, won in double OT last night. I really needed that. I have him in the Natty. So I needed it. Bracket would have been busted had they lost to Oregon last night. So thanks, Creighton.
Yes, sir. Let's see. Has anything happened really in terms of movement in like free agency? Since we last talked, I don't even know. I don't think so.
Nah, it's kind of quieted down since the last time we conversed. I think, you know, a lot of focus is turned back to the draft, and there'll be some stuff heating up. I mean, obviously,
a bunch of pro days have happened. I know that.
Yeah, and I do believe that the Justin Fields trade happened after the last time we recorded. That's probably the biggest thing that's happened since the last time, but. Nothing. Actually, no, I think that happened right before we recorded last. So I think we did talk about it maybe.
It's possible.
Gosh, it's been a long week. It's been a long week since the last time we talked. So I'm trying to remember everything. Give us a little grace here.
Yeah, no worries, man. Let's see. Did you want to jump right into these running backs we got today?
Let's do it.
Let's see. So I actually got some comps for you. So Mitch, don't come for me in the comments. I got some. This Although the last two, I couldn't really. One of them you might laugh at. And then two of them, they look very similar to me. Although I don't think they play like the dude I'm going to mention. They just look like the dude when they're running the ball. So we'll see how you think of those.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I am excited to get into this group. It, you know, as always, kind of try and give the outward looking in scope of the crew as a whole. I think this year's running back group is deeper than last year's class. Like, you have more guys that will ultimately make NFL rosters and contribute for a while.
Okay.
However, it does not have the talent at the top that last year's class had. Last year, we knew that Gibbs and Bijan Robinson were both first-round premium talents. This year, I just don't think you have that guy, right? You don't have the first round pick guy. We may not see a running back drafted until round 3, which would be pretty crazy. I don't know what the record is in terms of that, how long you could go in the draft without seeing a running back taken, but I would think that would be close. We may see a guy sneak into round 2, and certainly there's a couple guys that I think I would take maybe in round 2, but As far as round 1, I think it's pretty safe to say we won't see a running back taken in the first round this year. It'll be most likely the first guy taken will be taken in, you know, the back half of round 2 or early round 3 would be my guess. So, however, I could see a lot of backs taken in rounds 3 and 4, right? Yeah. I would say there's potentially 12 guys that I would take in the third round.
Sheesh.
Now, our team's going to take 12 running backs in round 3? No, which means similar to the way we talked about receivers, where you can get a really good one in round 2, you can get a really good running back this year in round 4. Yeah. I have a feeling because of the way the draft will fall, So some of these guys that we talk about today will probably be a fourth round pick, but they're one of the five best guys in the entire class. So there's a lot to like with this crew. It's super deep. There's a lot of good ones. They just don't have the same level of talent at the very top that last year's class had. But, you know, every class is different. And I think, you know, we can see the strengths of this one. So who we got first, Joe?
So kicking us off, we got Bucky Irving out of Oregon. He's 5'9", 192. He's got 3 years in college. His first year was Minnesota. He's got 38 total games in his 3 years. He ran for 2,934 yards. Got 20 rushing touchdowns. He averages 6.2 yards per attempt. He's got 783 receiving yards and 5 receiving touchdowns. And then I think he had some combine numbers. Let me check. He ran a 4.55 in his 40 with a 1.54 on the 10 yards. Let's see. We got 29.5-inch vertical. And that's all I got from the combine.
Yeah. All right, Bucky Irving. I think the first thing that jumps out looking at him, he was an explosive player at Oregon. Very elusive, right? That's probably his most elite skill is his ability to make people miss. It's got a nasty little hezzy, in and out, right? He's got a smooth jump cut. He's also, you know, he's a smaller target, which makes it difficult for defenders to find him in open field because, you know, his target is so small. You got to be perfect to go get him, right? I think what he reminds me of, the biggest thing that I'll say in terms of, you know, what I think he can be in the NFL is that kind of change of pace back that gives you that elusiveness, right? So you see him here in the hole. This guy's got him dead to rights, right? One-on-one in the hole. There's not a lot of space to work with there. And he makes the guy miss and then scores a touchdown. It was against Washington State this year. Tough one for that safety. But again, he's in and out, and then he can go. You know, when he gets in the open field, tough to bring down, tough to find, you know, the target on him because he is so small. He plays low to the ground. Again, that ability to turn what looks like should be a tackle into an arm tackle and then break that tackle, right? Here's a little film of him as a freshman at Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Again, makes two dudes miss in the backfield, scores the touchdown, right? He's a little jitterbug back there. Tough to find, definitely. Tough to tackle. He's got a lot of moves in his bag. This is one of my favorite. Like one miss, two miss, three miss, four. Nearly five, right? He's got four almost people on the ground there trying to tackle him. Yeah, that couldn't get him. The next thing to me is his contact balance, which you will hear people throw out. Right. And the simplest meaning of contact balance is he stays up even when people make contact. Right. He's able to, you know, despite being a smaller player, break a lot of tackles because he shifts his weight, you know, into the tackle to account for where the contact's coming from. And that counteracts its impact on his forward momentum so that he can stay up and keep going. Right. So you see that here in this cut up. I think this is against BYU maybe. But again, like guys kind of just fall off of him because he anticipates where contact is coming from. Or I believe that's Portland State, sorry. Against UCLA here. Again, carrying defenders. You know, you can put an arm out and it's not gonna really impact him. You gotta get multiple guys to the ball, and even then, right, you see him kind of driving the pile. Again, goes back to his freshman year at Minnesota. Tough to tackle, man. He keeps those legs driving. Again, moves a pile, stays up, counteracts where contact is coming from to stay on balance. This is one of my favorite ones here against Utah. Just he puts that hand down, finds his way into the end zone. Can't remember if they called it a touchdown or not. It was very close. But again, that ability to stay on balance even when you're receiving contact from defenders, valuable skill to have in the league, right? And then last but not least, he's a legitimate receiving threat out of the backfield.
Yeah, definitely.
He was a really good receiver at Oregon specifically. He caught 85% of his passes thrown his way in his career, averaged over 8 yards a catch, and he has the most receiving touchdowns of all the guys in this top five, right?
Mm-hmm.
So here you go against UCLA. Just a little swing route, and then runs upfield to turn it into something more when Bo Nix is in trouble, able to kind of get some extra yards after the catch. Here he is running the under route, or the wheel route, again from the backfield. That's on fourth down, by the way. Turns it into a touchdown. Again, little swing route out of the backfield, turns that into a touchdown. Really soft hands, sees the ball well, able to use vision after the catch to get yards after the catch. Here he is running the under route, accelerates once he gets the ball in his hands. That's a first down. Again, running the under route, accelerates, another first down, big time play. Here he is against with Minnesota as a freshman. Again, catch the ball on the vertical seam as the running back. Breaks one tackle, almost breaks another, gets him into the red zone, near the red zone, I should say. So all that reminds me specifically of Tony Pollard with the Cowboys, who is now just signed with the Titans in free agency. Kind of that smaller change of pace back, maybe eventually becomes the number one back in his career like Pollard did. But that contact balance is what you see from Pollard here, able to drive the pile even though he's a smaller guy, right? Then you see the receiving ability, again, able to take something, you know, nothing, cut back, elusive receiving threat. Here he is again, that elusivity, tough to tackle, tough to find, stays on his feet. He's a receiving threat out of the backfield, does a good job on a lot of that stuff. Nice cut right there, breaks an arm tackle. Contact balance keeps him up, nearly gets in the end zone. And then the last one here, again, this is kind of all of it. The receiving threat, the ability to stay on balance even when there's contact, be elusive, find a way to score or nearly score. It's a big play, right? So similar athletic profile, similar build, similar skill sets. I really think, and I've always thought that Pollard is good as maybe your change of pace guy. He needs to share the backfield with someone else to be effective. I think the same could be said of Bucky Irving. But Joe, what were your thoughts on Bucky Irving?
All right, so you talked about his elusiveness. I wrote down he was really shifty. You know, you saw a bunch of the cuts in the backfield, making people stand still, getting extra yards off of that, having them just being flat-footed. I said he was fast. So I started off, when I watched all these dudes, I started off with Blake Corum. And in relationship to him, you could tell Bucky has more breakaway speed compared to Blake, where Blake is like the first like 10, 15 yards. That's where all his speed's coming from, and he's not going to run off on you. You know what I mean? And then, let's see. I said he had really good awareness. I feel like that kind of goes hand in hand with your contact balance, where he could tell where someone's coming from. I think there was even some plays where people were diving at his legs, and you could see him like kick his legs up so they don't touch him, you know? And then, let's see. I wrote down, he runs with his hand up. So like probably halfway through, you'll see him where like his hand just kind of hovering around everywhere instead of like going back and forth. It's like side to side, trying to guide people and make sure he knows like, oh, I'm going to get this dude over here somewhere and maybe try to confuse him. I thought that was pretty funny. And then I wrote down, they like him in screen. So that kind of makes sense why he's got the most receiving touchdowns out of anyone in this group. Just they really do like using him outside as well. And I wrote down blowing kiss. So I guess he really, when he scored touchdowns, he liked the blowing kiss to the fans at his celebration. And then for my comp on him, I like, this is mainly more towards the side of him being shifty in the backfield. I went with Le'Veon just with that quick vision off rip. Now, I don't think he runs with nearly as much down the field the same way as him, but in terms of how quick they are in the backfield, making the jump cut, I think they're similar in that sense right there.
I like it. You know, it's funny you mentioned the breakaway speed factor. Would it surprise you to know
that he
and Blake Corum have the same 40 time?
Yeah, I saw
they're both 4.5 guys.
And I was like, whoa. this doesn't make at that point it had me thinking. So it's funny you bring that up already. So Arian Foster always talks about how he ran a 4.6 in his combine day, but he was like, when it came to the like playing time, he was like, well, one, I had a torn hamstring, so you can't knock me too much. But two, he was like, when it came to game time, I was breaking off on dudes who ran 4.4s at corners. Like, it means nothing in the time, you know. He's like, I just did it so people had film on me. He's like, trust me, I was faster than it, what the number said. So like, that's kind of where I as soon as I saw that, I was like, okay, this is where one of those instances for sure.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a fair. It's a fair point, and it's funny because, like I said, it just it goes back to, you know, we had this conversation with Mitch about the receivers.
Yeah,
you know, you're talking about play speed versus, you know, combine speed, right? And they can be different.
Definitely.
That's why generally you trust the film more than you trust those combine numbers. But just kind of revisiting Puggy Irving, his ceiling, what he does for you in the NFL. I think he gives you a little bit of explosive playmaking in both the run game and the passing game. He's a back that's likely best as a change of pace guy, similar to how Tony Pollard started his career with Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, I like that comp for sure.
I think he'll excel in a heavy gap scheme and then as a receiver out of the backfield. I think that's where you let him be himself to the fullest extent. Based on everything I've looked at right now, it looks like he's a round 3-5 guy. So could go as early as round 3, as late as round 5, depending on scheme fit. I would expect him to go at the higher end of that projection. I'd be kind of surprised if he lasted to the 5th round, just because he does have that explosive playmaking element to his game. So that's kind of where I see Bucky Irving. That's where we think he'll end up. It would be very interesting to see him end up in, like I said, a place that uses heavy gap scheme, because I think that's where he'll be the best.
What do you feel about the Ravens with them just getting Derrick Henry?
Well, I feel like they have Keaton Mitchell there, so that would be tough. But maybe, you know, no one's going to – everyone will think that the next guy we're going to talk about will go to the Chargers because it's his former head coach. But maybe something like the Chargers where you have Gus Edwards, but Bucky Irving could be the change of pace guy. Or even, you know, I know they've kind of had a rotating crew of backs behind Christian McCaffrey, but even with the Niners – kind of being the change of pace guy to Christian McCaffrey, I don't think would be the worst thing in the world, because they employ a lot of gap scheme stuff. I have a feeling the Chargers will as well with Greg Roman. So I think those two places would be good fits for him.
Gotcha. Well, looking ahead, like you mentioned, we got Blake Corum out of Michigan. He's 5'8", 205, played 3 years there with 46 total games. He ran for 3,732 yards. He got 58 rushing touchdowns. He averaged 5.5 yards per attempt. He's got 411 receiving yards and then 3 receiving touchdowns. We got, where are we at? Right here, 4.53 in his 40. He got 1.58 in the 10-yard split. He did 35.5 inches in the vertical. We got a 6.82 in the 3 cone. He did 4.12 in his shuttle, and then he did 27 reps on the bench.
So, I mean, just in terms of Blake's combine stuff, the fact that he's a guy who could run 27, you know, do 27 reps of bench, but then also be a 4.5 guy in the 40 and like the 4.1 short shuttle. Like, I mean, he's an impressive athlete to be able to do all that. You know, to test that, to be that strong, but still be that quick. And that's kind of the thing that you love about him when you watch him on tape. I mean, the biggest thing is that elite jump cut. Mm-hmm. I think he's got the best jump cut of anyone in this draft. It's probably his greatest strength. It was the thing that took him the longest to get back after he had the knee surgery, you could tell.
Okay.
But once he got it towards the back half of the season, it really did show up in the biggest moments for Michigan. So he's got incredible lateral movement. Reminds me of what we said about Bijan Robinson in last year's draft class. He just gets from one place to the other and is vertical like that. Mm-hmm. Like, and he does have that burst. Does he have the top end speed that Bijan Robinson does? No. Yeah. And I think you already mentioned that earlier, and that's maybe the big difference between the two. But in terms of being able to get lateral and vertical quickly, like, he's just as good.
Definitely.
No, so you can see it here. Here's, the most famous of his runs probably against Alabama in that Rose Bowl in overtime. The jump cut to the left, right? Breaking the tackle into the end zone. Touchdown. Massive play, right? To put Michigan on top. But, like, you can really see it from here. He starts at the hash, and his jump cut takes him all the way to the middle of the field. It's like a 7-yard jump cut. Really impressive. Again, same thing here. Boom, boom. Against Bowling Green. And then enough speed to go get a huge chunk before he's tackled. Again, here it is. Bow. That jump cut left out the back door, and he's gone. Touchdown. Against Penn State, oof. Same thing. That jump cut. Loves going right to left with it.
Yeah.
And it is explosive. Like I said, he gets vertical very quickly. Again, there it is. This one is nasty because he had to jump left, but then get vertical right away. Oof. Make a miss, score a touchdown. So obviously that jump cut, he teleports on that thing. The next big thing is he's powerful. He plays with great power. Like I said, he's a guy that can run 4-5, but also bench 27 reps, right?
Mm-hmm.
He faced a loaded box in 2023 42% of the time. So nearly half of his carries were against 8-man boxes, right?
That's crazy.
And still, he forced 18 missed tackles per 100 touches. That's according to 33rd team. Even more impressive, he converted 60% of his third or fourth down carries to create first downs, despite the other team knowing, he's getting the ball in this third and short, fourth and short situation. So I think, he just has a nose for making the big play, especially in those moments. And he plays, part of it is because he just plays so low to the ground, he's super powerful. So there's another little jump cut. But just the power and explosion through it, right? Mm-hmm. Again, power through the hole. You're not going to tackle him. The jump cut shows up again as well. Look at the footwork. You're not going to arm tackle him. He's going to score, right? Even here, in the open field, right? And I think really more or less that's showing off the vision, which I think I'll talk about here in a second.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I may have even messed up my cut-ups, the order. So I'll just tell you, this is really his vision. But he has great vision to find holes even when there isn't one, right? And you saw that right there. And even in the passing game, he's a bit of an underrated pass catcher. Obviously, we saw, and he runs the space well. If I want to talk about the power, maybe I'll go to this one, and this should give us a little bit more of that, his ability to break arm tackles.
Yeah.
And honestly, what's funny about all these plays is on every play, it feels like you can see all the elements of the jump cut, the power, running through people, the vision to see the hole and get there. So, I'm not mad that I even mixed them up because, like I said, you can see it in every cut up here.
Yeah, traits in all of them.
Yep. But he also, I think, when he's close to the end zone, the guy finds his way into the end zone. And that's the point of the last few clips here. He's going to get in there. Like, he will power his way through. It seemed like he was 100% on those goal line carries.
No, for real.
And just teams. He's so low to the ground, it's really hard to put him on the ground. That run right there against Rutgers, one of my favorite, just bowling through two dudes. This one is, you could credit the offensive line as much as Blake Corum.
I was going to say, they had a nice push on that one.
Yeah. But long story short, it's all of it. The elite jump cut, the power, the vision. And that vision is super invaluable because, a back with great vision can make a play even when it's not there, even when it's not being executed as it was designed. They can still, it's like that quarterback that can create when the first three reads aren't there and they can get out of the pocket. Okay, well, my back the play is designed to go here. I hit it there. It's not really there, but I see this out the back door. I can stick my foot in the ground, get there and go and still make a play. Especially against all the loaded boxes that he saw, you know, that was a huge trait for him and really was huge for Michigan, especially down the stretch. You saw all the big plays against Alabama, Ohio State, Penn State, yeah. Right? Those big all showed up. Too. There wasn't anything in here, you know, that you watched that was against Washington, but he made those plays in the national championship game as well. So all that to say, he reminds me a lot of Maurice Jones-Drew, kind of that smaller, thicker, but also still extremely quick back with the great jump cut, underrated in the passing game. This was Maurice Jones-Drew's first touchdown as a rookie in the NFL against the Colts. Here he is again against Oakland, breaking tackles, low center of gravity, getting into the end zone. Here he's again against the Titans, breaking that tackle, able to kind of cut it all the way back. There's another one of those jump cuts right back through a defender, runs through an arm tackle, scores. We got the grainy footage that makes it look like it's from 1938. But again, the jump cut is really the thing that you want to see right there. And then he's going to break a tackle because he plays with great power and find his way into the end zone. And I think now this is another powerful vision, seeing through the hole, powering his way into the end zone. You can't bring him down. And then this one is just the jump cut all the way lateral. Nasty. MJD had a really productive, nice career. I think he played for maybe 10 years, if I'm remembering right. Was a really good player in Jacksonville. I think Blake Corum has that same ceiling. You're not necessarily talking about a guy who is going to be the best running back in the NFL, but he's just going to be really good, solid, productive for a long time. You can draft this guy and have him be your back for the next 8 to 10 years.
Yeah, so this is probably one of the first times in a hot minute where I literally have everything you do. The only difference with power, I wrote down explosive, which I kind of talked about earlier too, where within those first like 10 yards, he's going to have that burst and just like power through you. And then for me, I kind of mentioned this one last time. I do like your Maurice Jones-Drew more so than mine, but I think I kind of just got caught up because I already mentioned it, you know? So I went with Kyren. But I think Kyren has more ability to work in the passing game, I think, as opposed to Blake. You know what I mean? Not saying he doesn't have it at all, but just I think he's gonna be. You'll get more production from Kyren in the passing game. But yeah, I had all the same jump cut and vision all written down.
Yeah. No, I mean it's pretty easy to see. You know, and I think. There are no true like one back teams anymore. No one just goes into games and it's like, all right, this guy's going to play all the reps. It just doesn't happen. The breakdown, the wear and tear on the bodies. But Blake Corum was a bell cow back for a national championship program. And you see, he gets better with touches. And I think he has the elite vision and jump cut to be impactful in a zone heavy offense. I think he'll be good as an early down, you know, 15 plus carries guy that could be paired with a reliable third down guy to spell him. Mm-hmm. Not that he couldn't be the third down guy, but right now that's probably his biggest weakness in his game. He needs to get better in pass protection and be a better receiver. I think he's a little underrated in that area, but he could still get better. Similar to what Maurice Jones-Drew was able to do in his career. So considering the pedigree and everything that, he can do. Sounds like he's kind of a second to fourth round guy. Could possibly be the first back off the board. Certainly will be, you know, somewhere in that first to fourth back taken, it appears. And we'll see where he goes. Like I said, I think he's better as a zone heavy guy and would be good if he was paired with another guy who does some of the pass protection and receiving stuff better than he does right now. Obviously, you know, the Chargers are a team that everyone likes for him because of the Harbaugh connection. I wouldn't be shocked if he goes there, but the fact that they signed Gus Edwards makes me feel a little bit like that might not be where he goes unless they're planning on running the ball 30 times a game.
Yeah.
In which case, then you could each give each of those guys 15 totes. I don't know.
I was going to say, maybe the Broncos? They got Samaje for the passing game more often than not. Not bad.
Yeah, and I mean, Javonte Williams has struggled with injuries, so yeah. I could see that. You know, maybe another team that they're going to have to replace Josh Jacobs, maybe the Raiders. Right. So I could see a few different teams taking a really, you know, a chance on him being kind of their lead back in like I said, a sort of a two back system. No one's a one back system anyways these days. Yeah. So, but yeah, I think, that's probably his best bet.
So next guy we're taking a look at is Will Shipley out of Clemson. He's the tallest back we're looking at so far. He's 5'11", 206. He played for 3 years there with 37 games. He ran for 2,747 yards. He's got 31 touchdowns, rushing touchdowns, I should say, with an average of 5.2 yards per attempt. He's got 602 receiving yards with 2 receiving touchdowns. Let's see. I don't let me double check. Yeah, I don't have no combine numbers.
Yeah, combine.
Nah.
Yeah, he did everything at his pro day. And I know he tested well at the pro day. I know they had him as a 38.5-inch vertical, 6'8", 3 cone, 4'11", short shuttle. And I think I saw 4.39 in the 40, which was sort of surprising because he doesn't look that much faster on tape than some of these other guys.
Uh-huh.
He's certainly got some speed to him, but he doesn't look 4.39 fast. I would say the first thing that I noticed when watching him was that he's really patient. Not quite Le'Veon Bell patient, but but really patient. A lot of plays where a hole isn't there, and then, you know, especially where it's designed to go initially, and then he has the patience to kind of sit and scan until he sees that hole open and burst through it. Once again, kind of like Blake Corum, makes him a really good zone back. So here you go. Here's that patience on a zone scheme play. Kind of able to see and wait for that hole to open. The patience to let it open and then find it. This one is a power gap scheme play. But again, the patience to let the pullers get there. Another zone scheme play, presses it, cuts it up. The athleticism in the second level to make things happen. Again, zone scheme, presses it, cuts it back. Inside zone, make a defender miss. Boom. Great cut. Now, this is kind of that sprint draw look.
Yeah.
You got to be really patient as a back to let that develop and kind of sit and wait. Again, he gets in the line of scrimmage and then cuts back to the outside where he sees the hole open, makes linebackers commit before he finds the hole. Really patient runner. I like that a lot about him. He does this very well. He's a great zone back because he has that patience and vision. And then he's got the burst, obviously, once he finds it to make a play. The next thing I like about him is he can run routes really well for a running back. He's not quite Jahmyr Gibbs, what he was last year, but he's a reliable route runner, so much so that they split him out sometimes and let him run, you know, hitches. Yep. It's the opener from 2022 against Georgia. They'll let him run the angle route, the old school Texas route for a touchdown against Florida State. Again, the Texas route, little option route over the middle. Not enough to do something after the catch, enough juice, right? Get him the ball out in space on the RB swing screen right now, right? Same thing here. Out in space, get it to him. He has reliable hands. He'll catch it. Go make something happen after the catch. Again, this one's just on the swing route, and he's going to turn it into something more.
Yeah.
End up scoring on the play, turning it up. Again, this one's the true RB wheel route. Break a tackle after the catch. So you can see he does a lot of that well. You know, he caught 85 passes in 3 years at Clemson. He also ran over 400 routes, during that time. So he is no stranger to route running. He likes it. He's good at it. And then the last thing, his athleticism. I mentioned he tested really well at his pro day, 38.5-inch vertical, 6'8", 3 cone, 4'11" short shuttle. And those skills show up on tape. It's not just, you know, good job testing. They actually do show up. His footwork in the hole or in the backfield to get to an open hole suggests, you know, he's got that lateral quickness and initial burst to get himself to the second level. And then you can see when he's there, you know, even that vertical comes into play because he'll hurdle people in open space to get extra yards. So here you go. A little bit of that on tape. Nice footwork to get through the hole, get to the second level, break tackles, run past people. Same thing here. He's like a shot out of a cannon, able to not only hurdle a guy, but then come down and break two tackles to get in the end zone. Again, same thing here. He gets on people quick with that first quick burst. Again, you see the patience and the vision once again, but then the ability to make those people miss with the athleticism. Then he even do stuff like this, you know.
It's the Derrick Henry
jump pass. Nice. Again, like his explosion out of the blocks. He reminds me of like a track hurdler. Like he can explode out of the box. He's got enough juice to jump over people. Like he is an explosive athlete. And I don't think people give him enough credit for that. Because he did have to face so many difficult defenses when he was at Clemson, because they changed coordinators while he was there. They changed quarterbacks. Like he did have a difficult situation in his time at Clemson. And yet their offense ran through him majority of the time. Reminds me of Chuba Hubbard, who kind of came, you know, was a really big household name as a running back in college, like Will Shipley at Oklahoma State, and kind of, you know, got drafted in, I believe, round three or round four with Carolina. Initially, kind of the second back, slowly morphed into over the last year or so, they're starting back and has been very productive. Does a little bit of everything. You see the patience, the vision, the explosion, the athleticism at the second level. Here he's against the Lions a couple years ago. Again, burst and explosion to run past people, right? Will Shipley certainly has that, but also the vision to see it, right? The patience to let it open, the vision to see it and get there, the athleticism to make it happen once he sees it. Here you go again. The patience, let the hole open and then burst through it, make people miss, make guys have to tackle you in that second level, and it's not easy, right?
Yeah.
Also, the Panthers just blocked extremely well in this game against the Lions a couple years ago. And then, last but not least, against the Ravens, the pass game, right? That element, being able to catch a pass, swing pass, and take it, go get yards after the catch, much like Will Shipley does. So that was my comp for him. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, so for me, I had his vision written down, kind of similar to what you talked about with like his patience, you know. He's a north and south guy, so you could see more often than not, once he sees the hole, he's boom, gone. He's not over here trying to dance around too often. Like he might get shifty on a dude down in the secondary, but not once he sees that hole. And then I have he's a big time hurdler, which you kind of showed towards the end with the athleticism. And then I had swim move slash juke. So more often than not, when he's hitting a juke, he likes to I'm gonna throw the ball over your head guy. You know what I mean? Where you push him off and you go over top with the ball. That's a little risky, but I mean if it's working,
I was gonna say his running back coach probably doesn't like that.
yeah, for sure. And so for my comp, this is the one where you might laugh. So first person I wrote down was Johnny. Back in the, for some reason, he just looked like Johnny's like high school tape. But
shout out Johnny.
Yeah. Too bad he couldn't pull up today. You know what I mean? But
we tried to get him on, folks.
Yeah, we tried. Let's see. But my two comps I did go with, I went Austin Eckler / like Isaiah Pacheco.
Okay.
Because like I feel when he's going north and south, he's running like Pacheco. And then in terms of the passing game, he kind of reminded me of like Austin Eckler, where he like plays lower when he's in the open space like that. I don't know.
Got a little more speed, I think, than Eckler.
Oh, no, definitely. Early Eckler. You've seen the tape.
Yeah. So in terms of what he can do, like I said, he had to carry the load for a Clemson offense the last few seasons that was transitioning through multiple quarterbacks, offense coordinators, was struggling a little bit. But he was the one consistent source of offense. They used him in a lot of creative ways. I think if he can become better in pass protection, he's an every down type of back. That's the big area he needs to to get better in is to become a better pass pro guy, so that he can stay on the field on third down, not just to catch the ball, but to be in protections too. That's a big thing in the NFL. You got to be able to do all of it. But he does a little bit of everything else pretty well. I think he's dynamic in the open field, in space, when you can get him the ball that way. Like I said, could be a Chuba Hubbard type situation where he's initially drafted as a second back, but slowly could become your best guy over years two, three, four. So I like him a lot from that standpoint. He is, again, another kind of third to fifth round type pick. Teams are going to get value when they take these guys in round three, round four. Definitely. You know, if he gets to round five, someone's completely getting a steal, you know, because you could be getting a starting caliber running back in round five. So really good player that I like a lot.
Yeah, the next guy we're going to be looking at is going to be Braylon Allen out of Wisconsin. He's 6'1", 235. He played for 3 years. He's got 34 games at Wisconsin. He ran for 3,484 yards. He's got 35 rushing touchdowns with an average just under 6 yards at 5.9 yards per attempt. He's got 275 receiving yards and no receiving touchdowns. And then he's also got a 32-inch vertical with a 9.9 on his broad jump and 26 reps on the bench.
The first thing that you see with Braylon Allen, you don't even have to watch his tape. You could just look at him walking into a room. The man is massive. He's 235, and he just runs through people on tape. Has a really nice blend of the big frame with the strong legs that allows him to break arm tackles with consistency and even just like run people over at the second level. 33rd team had him forcing 19 missed tackles per 100 touches over the course of his career. Let's let the tape speak more than me, right? So here you go. Game against Minnesota, tie ball game, 14-14. He's going to break one tackle, two tackle, three tackle, and then burst, right? And get himself inside the five. Here you go again against Buffalo. One tackle, two tackles, three tackles, four tackles, five tackles, six tackles.
That's the defense right there to tack him down.
Five guys to get him to the ground. Again, against Purdue? Nah, sorry, 14, didn't have a chance, bro. Not low enough. Couldn't get him. You're not going to put this guy on the ground with arm tackles. Look at him. He just runs through people. People cannot tackle this guy. He's too strong. Right, I mean, the strength in his legs and even his upper body, obviously, as evidenced by the 26 reps of bench. I'm sure he squats a million pounds. Right, even in the pass game, he catch one, just dude puts the Iowa linebacker literally on the ground. How embarrassing! And gets up and flexes on him.
My guy hit
against
him
Illinois once again, putting dudes on the ground. Guys get super low, but they don't run their feet to tackle him. And he'll just put them like literally on their back, right? So he's extremely strong. The next thing that I like about him, it's like true rarity nowadays to see college running backs that are good in pass protection, right? I mean, most of them either run routes instead or they're just not very good at pass pro. They're like, hey, I didn't get recruited to come pass block. I'm trying to run the ball, right? And so they're just not good at it. They haven't had to do a lot of it. They like to catch the ball. They don't want to be in the protection. But he's one of those rare guys that has clearly worked on it, and he improved every year mightily through his college career. The evidence of that, right? Wisconsin asked him to be in protections nearly 10 times a game this year. Okay. Right? No, there's no other back touching like six or seven in this grouping here. So clearly he's really good in protections. He does it extremely well, and we'll just let the tape, you know, obviously it's shorter tape here. No one puts together highlights of pass pro for running backs, but he does a good job. Look, he finds the blitzer and he smokes him. Yeah. I love that he brings contact too. It's no different than when he's running the ball. He'll bring contact and then he'll even move his feet post contact to keep a guy. He'll knock a guy off, right? So he's got some good ones, some good reps there. It's only three of them against Ohio State and Illinois, but they're good ones to elucidate exactly what he does well.
He's got good hands on this one, too. like,
and then he moves his feet post contact, right? Gives his quarterback time. And that's all you're asking for. Find blitzes, help your offensive line, give you quarterback time. Does a really good job of that. Now, last but not least, his footwork. I mean, for being like, you know, the quote unquote big back, he has really impressive feet. He cuts in and out to space well. And then he forces a lot of arm tackles because his feet are so good. And then we know what happens when people try and arm tackle him. He's too strong.
Yeah.
So it adds some dimension to the idea that maybe some may perceive him as just like a downhill back because he's so big. But his feet are really good. So you watch here against Minnesota, kind of near the goal line, kind of stops his feet for that second, gets a defender stop. Again, creates an arm tackle. He's going to break arm tackles. This one, nice little pop, pop, pop. Into the hole and slowly cuts it all the way back against the grain to score. Right here against Buffalo. Again, he has a nice little sidestep. He's always on balance. His feet are very good.
Oh, I had
I'm sure like him. Watching this guy do like ladder drills is amazing because his footwork is so good. I think the behind angle on this one does it really good justice. He's waiting for that hole to open up, right? His gap scheme, following the puller. He kind of stops his feet. He's going to look like he's going to cut back this way. Keeps it front side, right? The feet.
Linebacker right there, too.
Mm-hmm. Again, just able to kind of sidestep that defender. It's not as, I guess, pronounced as like the Blake Corum jump cut.
Yeah.
But it's just real little movements that create space for himself. And again, he doesn't necessarily need a guy miss entirely. He just needs to force an arm tackle because he knows he'll run through that.
Like that one.
Right.
Although that guy
and he's just really good. His feet are really good at creating just enough space for him to kind of slip by a guy. So now it becomes an arm tackle. And then he just uses his strength to run through people. So I think people have not pointed that out enough about him, is just how good he is in his footwork. Reminds me of the Quadzilla AJ Dillon, right? The strength to run through arm tackles, but the grace with the footwork to create those arm tackles. So here you go, little AJ Dillon film here. The Packers the last few years, you see the nice feet running through arm tackles, tough to bring down, right? Once again, against Buffalo, the feet cut it back, break an arm tackle, make a guy miss. Enough juice, maybe not quite enough juice to score on a big play like that, but definitely enough to make a big play.
Yeah.
He'll run through arm tackles. He'll use his footwork to create those arm tackles, and he's got enough juice in the open field to make a big play, even if he's not going to score. And if you're close enough, he may just carry a dude in the end zone like he does on that one. Right? Again, boom, the footwork to cut off. Tough to tackle. And then even AJ Dillon, you know, is pretty good in pass pro as well. Right? And you'll see that here in a second as he gets himself into the end zone against Chicago. And then he'll pick up a protection against Minnesota. Boom.
That was nice.
Stifles guy. That looks a lot like the Braylon Allen one against Illinois. So I think you can see the comparison, why I like those two as comps for each other. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, so for me, I had written down that he was bouncy slash a pinball. I mean, basically, that goes what you were talking about with him at the arm tackles. Just like as soon as he gets, I would say it's similar to how you talked about with the like contact balance earlier. I'd say that's kind of how I feel with him too. And then I said he changes his pad level, so it's not like in a bad way. Like you said, most people will go low on them, but he'll match like how low they are. And since they're sitting so low, they're just going to fall back. You know what I mean? It's like they're putting themselves at a disadvantage at that point. And then similarly, you talked about how his footwork is like kind of choppy, like early on. I put he has a juke slash a stutter slash like a shuffle. Like in the backfield, it's like a quick little hezzy. In the down the field, it's more of like a shuffle where he'll like do some quick chop steps to go laterally instead of like hit a juke where it's like you're putting all emphasis on one leg, you know what I mean? It's like his way of hitting a juke. And then for my comp on him, I went with Derrick Henry, just being like the taller back.
Poof, lofty.
Yeah, I know, but I think the size and similar to how I feel like it kind of takes a couple steps for them to get going down the field. Now, I don't know if he'll amount to that, but it's how I just saw him running, you know?
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. The comp is the, I understand it. I just, man, golly. I think My thing with him, I think he excels as a second back that can be the Thunder to someone else's Lightning.
Yeah.
I think a lot about the setup the Packers had for years with A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones.
Yeah.
I think he'll do best with some gap scheme that allows him to find the hole, get downhill through defenders quickly. And I think he can even be a great option on third down as a reliable pass protector, which adds even greater value. Of course, he could be a little better as a receiver. But I think it works with A.J. Dillon in Green Bay, who will now have Josh Jacobs as the primary back, right? I could see something similar for him, you know, in a situation like that where he's the Thunder to someone else's Lightning.
The Titans?
You know, you start thinking about, huh?
The Titans?
Sure. I mean, you know, they've got Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears is kind of like the Lightning guys. Maybe you add Braylon Allen and you make it a three-headed monster with the Thunder. You know, I don't know. You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm trying to think of the teams that only really have one true back. I mean, I would not hate the Rams to take him to pair with Kyren Williams. You know, and you run more, you know, you run all your duo stuff with Kyren Williams, but you run more of your gap scheme stuff with Braylon Allen. Changes what defenses are seeing and what they have to prepare for. So, and then obviously, like I said, the reliability as a pass protector on third down for Matthew Stafford would not be the worst thing in the world either. So, you look at it right now, he's another back that falls in that round three through round five range. So many of them do right now. That's where all these guys are going to get taken. You're going to see that run. Those middle rounds, those middle three rounds, rounds three, four, and five, you're going to see probably, I mean, I would be surprised if it wasn't at least 20 running back. It feels like 15 guys taken in that range, you know, five in each round, five in the third, five in the fourth, five in the fifth. I would imagine 15 running backs get taken in that grouping. But who we got last here?
Yeah, last guy we're taking a look at today is going to be Dillon Johnson out of Washington. He's 6 foot, 217. He's got 4 years in college. He played his first 3 years at Mississippi State. He's got 49 games during his career. He has 2,371 rushing yards with 27 rushing touchdowns. He got 5.2 yards per attempt on his carries, with 1,777 receiving yards and one receiving touchdown. He ran a 4.68 in his 40 with the 1.62 in that 10-yard split. He has 31.5-inch vertical, and he did 9.9 on the broad jump.
All right, Dillon Johnson. Of course, he's been downgraded completely because of the 4.68 40 time. That was not great for him. However, he's another one of those guys that I think plays a little bit faster on film than what that 40 time says he is. And we'll see some of that here.
Yeah, I agree.
But he is a guy, to me, that does basically everything well. Does he do anything elite? No. But he does everything well. He's super well-rounded. He's like a totally complete back, right? The thing that I noticed that stood out to me first and foremost was his toughness. I mean, he just runs hard. He runs with like a grittiness that is just very noticeable. He does not want to go down on first contact. He was extremely durable during his college career. Obviously, the guy played nearly 50 games in 4 years.
Yeah.
He played through injuries pretty often. The way he played in the national championship, right, it wasn't his best game, but the fact that he even played was impressive considering the injury he was playing through. And last, you know, that toughness showed up. Every time he got close to the end zone or a first down marker, he found a way to get there for his team. I feel like he is just 100% in those kinds of situations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here you go. Here he is against Arizona, running tough, right? Breaking tackles at the line of scrimmage. Guys, he's just gritty. He just runs hard.
Yeah.
And I think we've kind of – the modern running back is less tough runner as much as it is flash and speed and explosiveness. So I kind of like Dillon Johnson as like a throwback running back, right? He's not a 4.3 guy. He's a 4.6 guy. But he runs so hard that he makes up for some of the lack of speed with just pure toughness and like desire, right? And it was apparent, like if he wasn't in the game, Washington's offense wasn't as good. And you're just seeing it right here. Look at how tough he runs, man.
Yeah.
He does not let people just bring him down on first contact. He's going to go run through someone's face. And right here, like, he would not be denied the end zone. He's getting in. This is a huge fourth down or third down play against Oregon. Going to go get the first down to seal the Pac-12 championship and then get down. Mm-hmm. Same thing in that Pac-12 championship game.
I saw that one. Yeah. I was like, what's he doing?
Near the end zone.
I was like, ah.
I mean, near the end zone, he's going to find his way in. He has that nose that says, I'm going to get there. I will not be denied.
Going through his own blocker right there, too.
Mm-hmm. Like, just the mentality, the grittiness, the toughness. I know I've said it a million times now, but that stands out, especially compared to a lot of the other modern backs. Okay? But then he gives you value on third down. He's both a plus. He's probably the only guy that we talked about today that is both a plus receiver and pass protector. In Washington's offense, he was the perfect fit because he had good enough hands and routes to be successful as an outlet for Michael Penix Jr., but he was also a disciplined blocker to stay in the protection when they had long developing routes. So here he is as a pass catcher. They put him out in empty, out as a receiver. Similar to what we saw with Will Shipley. He can run a little curl route, hitch route, make someone miss. Again, he's going to get a first down because he's tough. You run him on the swing route. He can just beat people to the corner. That doesn't look like a guy that's slow to me, right? Like, that looks fast. Here he is again, pass protection. Sets up a huge play against Texas in the college football playoff. Like, if he doesn't pick up that blitzer, that play is not there.
Yeah.
Once again, Pac-12 championship game. He's going to identify where the pressure's coming from. He's going to slide over, pick up the blitz, and if he's coming at him 10-yard full speed, he's going to hold his ground and give Michael Penix enough time to make that throw. And then this goes back to his career at Mississippi State. Runs the little swing route, turns it upfield, makes a diving catch. You can see he's got really nice hands. So he does all of those things well, in addition to being a tough runner, right? Last but not least, he has really, really good vision. He's another back that I think, you know, is a zone type back. He was good in both gap and zone schemes for them because he has the power to get downhill, but also the vision to cut it all the way back when necessary. So he was kind of one of the few guys that I think really excelled in both pretty efficiently. Here he is against USC. Again, this speed does not look like a guy who's just super slow. Like, he gets in the end zone. That's against USC. They got athletes all over the field. I know their defense wasn't very good, but they have fast dude. Like, number 7 chasing him down is not a slow guy, and he still gets in the end zone. Again, against USC on the flip route, he sees the hole, cuts it, and then he's gonna sprint. Number 7, got to chase him down again. Hit him out of bounds. He does not look 4.68 slow on film to me. He runs hard, and therefore he runs fast.
I feel it.
Here he is against Michigan State. Little counter play. Again, sees the hole, gets through it. Oof. Now, if he's 4.5 instead of 4.68, maybe he scores there, and that's a fair point. But I also don't think you watch his film and think, oh, he's just so slow.
Yeah, right? No, I feel you.
So, and the vision, like I said, it's excellent. He finds holes. He bursts through them. And this thing just keeps going. Plenty of tape on it where you can see he sees it and he gets there. And again, tough to tackle when he gets there because he just runs so gritty and so tough. He had a day against USC, huh?
Yeah, that's for sure.
Nice little cut there. Love both of those. Against Arizona. And it gives you the yell the end.
That's my fun.
Cut it all the way back against Oregon. Saw it, had the vision to get there. Oof, nice. Another cut back against Oregon, this time in the Pac-12 championship game. So, like I said, I think Dylan Johnson doesn't do anything to me that like makes you say, like, oh, he's better than anybody else in the class at this thing. He's not. But he's probably the most well-rounded guy. He does all of it well. There's not a like glaring hole in his game. He does a lot of things the right way. He reminds me of an old school back, and that is Sean Alexander. Now, Sean Alexander won the MVP, but he also would go and get 30 touches a game. Dylan Johnson's not going to get 30 touches a game. No one does, right?
Yeah.
So it's a little different era, but similar style of runner and a guy that you just felt like, okay, he does everything right. He's got good vision. Sean Alexander was not the fastest guy in the world. He didn't test that well. He's another guy who ran like 4.6. But in game speed, it always seemed like he could see the hole. He could burst through it. He would run just tough as nails. And he was just fast enough to get the job done. I mean, this run is a perfect example of that. And then he was reliable. He wasn't a guy that you were like, all right, we're going to throw 10 passes a game to him. But you could throw him the ball in the passing game. He was a pretty good blocker. He did a lot of things well. He did a lot of things right. That's why he was the MVP in, whatever it was, 2005.
2007, again, I think.
Different era, different kind of game. I'm not telling you Dylan Johnson's going to be an MVP. I just think he's what Sean Alexander would be if Sean Alexander played now, right? Mm-hmm. Also, the idea of like being kind of a bigger back, that 6 foot, 220 plus type frame. Again, there he was in the passing game. There's the vision to cut it all the way back against the grain. And once again, enough speed to make something happen at the second level. Now, is he going to score? Yeah, he does. Just enough speed to get it done and then let you know that he hit a home run, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's modern era Sean Alexander is what Dylan Johnson gives you. He'll never get the volume of carries. He'll never play in an offense that's similar, but I think he gives you some of the same traits that Sean Alexander did and in a different kind of NFL now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for me, I had written down that he has a leg drive. That's kind of what you were talking about, the toughness, where it's not going to be the first dude to stop him. You know, he's going to keep pumping those legs, make sure he's getting those tough yards, you know, grinding for the gritty ones, making sure he gets that first down or touchdown, depending on the situation. He's not a burner, which we saw, you know, he's got speed, but more often than not, if it's like a 60 plus, like, you know, he's not going to run out. He's gonna get caught somewhere down the road. He looks stiff when he's running to me. I don't know. Didn't really notice it as much today when I was watching the first time, I guess. And then he's not afraid of contact. So you could see when he's near the sideline, he's gonna go try to plow through that DB or safety, whoever was closest to him, and not try to get out of bounds and like save his breath for the next play. And then my comp I had for him, I went with playoff Lenny. So Leonard Fournette.
I like that comp a lot,
and,
actually.
And it's funny, too, because they both wore 7. And obviously, mm-hmm. they're kind of similar colors, too, when he was in college. So I don't know if that played a factor, but it definitely looked kind of similar.
No, I think similar build, similar style, too. Does everything kind of well. I think in college, you thought Leonard Fournette would be amazing because he had that burst in college that never quite showed in the NFL. But yeah, reliable guy who had a pretty decent career. With all that being said, yeah, I think Dylan Johnson's one of the most well-rounded backs in the entire class. Mm-hmm. I know he lacks the elite traits, the breakaway speed to make him a top-end back. The testing hurt him. Like I said, he ran 4.68. He only jumped 31.5 on the vert. But still, he's reliable. He can play in zone and gap schemes. He'll be able to play on all downs. Even if he isn't an explosive guy, he'll have a long career because he's so solid. And, you know, he'll do whatever he's asked to do well. I think he's a late round steal, right? A lot of the projections have him going somewhere rounds 5 through 7. If someone takes him that late, they're getting a steal because this guy can be a guy that you can legit play on all downs, can take carries, can be in your pass protections, you can throw him the ball. Like, he'll do all the things well. So I think someone will end up getting a late round steal here. I think he's a 5th round guy. I don't think he gets to round 6 or 7.
Seven seems crazy.
We'll see. We'll see.
Let's see. Who do you want to have go first in the rankings today?
I think I went first last time. We'll give you the honor today.
For sure. So starting off my list for the rankings of these 5 dudes, we got Blake Corum. I think he's the most like ball ready looking dude out of all of these. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the good traits, and I think him being a little shorter than all of them kind of makes it help. And you know, in terms of like the NFL, where he could kind of hide behind his blockers, and then he's gonna burst to get that those like 5 to 10 yards and get a first down. And then next guy I got is Bucky Irving from Oregon. I think I liked him more in the passing game in terms of most of these dudes. So I feel like he's got potential in that front. The next dude I have is going to be Will Shipley from Clemson. I kind of almost, the way I watched him is the way I ordered him, which is kind of weird. It's kind of the first time it ever happened. But let's see, Will Shipley, I think, like I said, I guess my only knock on him was just whenever he would hit a juke, he's bringing the ball up above his head. And that's one thing, especially being a ball carrier, it's like tough to see. But I think he's got good vision, and I like how he played north and south, getting to point A to point B and not really dancing in the between. I got Braylon Allen after. I liked how he was just more of like a power dude, you know what I mean? And making sure he's breaking through those easy tackles that people are trying to get him going at his legs. He changes his pad level, makes them sit down, you know what I mean? And then I went with Dylan Johnson on the last dude. Kind of ties in with like the numbers that we talked about being with the speed and everything, you know what I mean? Like, not only did it reflect in the projected rounds, but like we saw too. It's like he's a good dude, but you're not gonna get him early on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. All right, I'll give you mine. So I also had Blake Corum one. I just think what he showed in college was the greatest volume and the most elite traits of any of the guys here. I think he's the closest one to being able to be a bell cow. Number two, I like Will Shipley and Bucky Irving were close to me because the passing dimension. Will Shipley's just more athletic. So I went with him at the second spot. And then three, I went with Bucky Irving. Like I said, similar type players in terms of, you know, the passing game. Now in the run game, they're very different. I think Will Shipley's more of a zone back, like I mentioned. Bucky Irving to me is more of a gap scheme guy. But in the passing game, the element that they give you is big time. So, but I went with Will Shipley just because of the more, you know, explosive athlete there. And then four and five, I have Dylan Johnson and Braylon Allen. Dylan Johnson, like I said, I just think he's very underrated because he's so well rounded. Again, the 4.68 does not scare me.
Yeah,
that's fine. I know he's not gonna go score touchdowns on those big breakaway runs, but he's going to create a lot of those kinds of runs because of his vision and his toughness, and he's just not going to go down. I think I love his mentality. And then Braylon Allen, to me, being as big as he is and the footwork that he has, I love that. There, like I said, there's a lot of backs in this draft. I've got six honorable mentions here that all could have easily been in this top five, and the gap from Blake Corum to the 11th guy on this list, in my mind, is not big. It's not big at all. And any one of these guys I'm mentioning could be the first back taken. That's how crazy this is. So honorable mention wise, I got Trey Benson from Florida State. A lot of people like him as their favorite back in the draft. I did not see the explosion on film that I thought I saw from some of these other guys. And that's why I have him as kind of an honorable mention. Similar thing with Audric Esteem from Notre Dame. Jonathan Brooks from Texas. He's a little bit more explosive, but I think he's a little more boom or bust. Frank Gore Jr., he has the name, obviously. This is kind of the namesake draft, like we mentioned before, from Southern Miss. Jace McClellan from Alabama was a guy who did some good things. And then probably the most explosive athlete of all the guys is Jalen Wright at Tennessee. And so, like I said, any of those names that I just mentioned could be guys that you see taken in the second or third round, could be taken as late as, you know, round five, right? And there's 11 guys right here. There's some more names that I didn't even give you today that people like that will probably be taken by the fifth round. So I think you could see, like I said, 15 backs taken between rounds two and five because there's a lot of decent, you know, none that are great, but a lot that are good. Yeah. And that's kind of what this draft class is. So anything else to add, Joe?
In terms of this, nah, but I mean, looking to, you know, we finally got an Instagram. You know what I mean? Your boy made it.
Hey,
I got to get something posted on there, but it's there. I'm following it. I'm the only follower at the moment. So y'all go follow. Go subscribe to the YouTube, you know, Apple, Spotify, all those good things. Review, leave a comment. Tell us what you're looking for, what you like, what you don't. Any feedbacks, good feedback, you know what I mean? Let's see. What else am I missing? TikTok, we're on TikTok. All of them should be the second and two podcast. More often than not, probably with right there, like behind TB. With the what is it called? Sampersand? I don't know.
The ampersand.
There you go. But on Instagram, we have the word and because it doesn't allow you to use characters like that. So, yeah, make sure you go do all those things. Let us know what you like and you don't.
And I think that's all we got for today. Appreciate you listening, watching, subscribing. We're going to keep giving you content. We still have corners, safeties, and quarterbacks to go before we get you a true mock draft. And we get ourselves ready for the draft at the end of April. We're about a month away, fellas. Yeah. Month away. And ladies, if there are any ladies listening, sorry, I don't want to want to keep anybody out here.
They don't want to corner out our fans.
Yeah. A month away, things are looking up. I'm excited. We've got three more groups to evaluate. We will release our true finished big board before the draft. We will give you a mock draft. We plan on having a couple more guests on before things are all said and done. And we're excited. I think our next group that we're going to be evaluating is the corners. So tune in for that the next week. And until then, take us out, Ray.
Yes, sir.
I guess we'll have to wait and see.